We are so happy that you have decided to turn your eyes to the light, and we will give you all the help we can so that you may continue through the Valley of the Shadow as soon as you are ready." As Aramius was speaking, a priest appeared at his side and spoke to Zhou. "You have called for help," he said, "henceforth I will be your guide." There was a moment during which Zhou felt hostility and resentment for the intrusion of this newcomer, but the feeling was quickly swept aside under the impact of a sense of utter contriteness, and he pleaded unashamedly for the priest to help him resolve the frustration and confusion. Never in his life, he thought to himself, had he ever wanted anything as deeply as that which he felt somehow intuitively that this kindly priest could give him. The priest felt the sincerity and the depth of Zhou's desire and was, in turn, grateful for it. It would enable him to be of correspondingly greater service to Zhou. Aramius left Zhou in the care of the priest, who now bade Zhou be seated, so that they could talk things over. The priest realized that the first and the most difficult task was to convince Zhou that he had made his transition, that he was what those still on the earth plane call dead. This was not easy. Zhou's stubborn refusal to believe, and his insistence that he was very much alive and always had been, kept surging to the fore as an impediment to the progress the priest was making. It became a tug of war between Zhou's unwillingness to accept the fact of his passing and his now mounting trust in this understanding priest. The priest was patient and unhurried, and before long Zhou began hesitating thoughtfully for a brief moment or two between hot-headed retorts that he was not dead. These periods of deep thoughtfulness slowly and gradually increased in duration, and at length the priest was gratified to find Zhou asking for clarification of things he had just told him. At last Zhou's counterblasts ceased altogether and he sat for a while in deep contemplation. The priest wisely did not impinge himself upon Zhou's silence. "You know, Father," Zhou said at length, "a lot of what you say don't make sense to me. I can't understand it at all. But a lot of what you say does make sense, sort of. And I wish you'd take me in hand, if you got time, and get me straightened out better. In order for me to be of the most help to you," the priest explained, "you must face the truth about yourself. You must realize and accept the fact that you are no longer of the earth plane. You must accept the fact that you are what you formerly would have called dead. You must deeply and sincerely desire to sever the hold which the earth has on you. You must be willing to release the earth from your own grasp and look to your new future. I cannot show you the nature of that future until you make your definite and final decision to release the past. This no one can do for you. You must stand alone, come to terms with yourself and decide what you want your next step to be. I will now leave you for the time being, that you may make your decisions and that they may be yours wholly. I will be waiting for you if you want to come to me." Zhou then found himself alone. He was not sure where the priest had gone, and his immediate reaction was one of fear. He had found someone who he felt could help him, and now suddenly this person was gone. But the fear passed as his trust in the understanding priest came to his rescue. He knew intuitively that he could, in truth, trust this man unequivocally and expect him to be there when needed. Zhou then engaged in a short time of contemplation of this trustworthiness more in the sense of basking in it, however, than in wondering about its actuality. His faith had become great enough that when his thoughts turned to the decisions he knew he must make, he realized there was no doubt as to what they would be. With high resoluteness he turned and faced a direction that was quite new to him. He could not be sure, later, whether he had started actually walking in that direction or whether he simply seemed to be walking. He was, however, definitely aware of a strange and unaccountable feeling of sudden changes in his makeup and his consciousness which he could not understand, nor did he attempt to analyze. Whatever the processes were, they were pleasant to him. The more he allowed them to come to the surface, the more they seemed to impel him in his new direction. After what seemed to Zhou to be considerable time, he noticed an approaching diffusion of light. There was something about it that was appealing to him, so much so that he strained all his resources to draw it closer. Then suddenly it was as if an indescribably beautiful dawn had broken, dispersing the darkness of the night. He felt intensely grateful that he had got through whatever it was from which he had just emerged. It was as if a tremendously heavy weight was suddenly lifted from his shoulders, and he was conscious of a sense of release which he had never before experienced. As he turned to look about him, he again found himself face to face with his kindly priest. It did not occur to Joe to ask why he had been left alone or where the priest had been. Joe somehow realized with an inner knowing that the journey he had just taken was vitally essential to his progress and his welfare, and that he had indeed had to make it alone and because he wanted to. "Welcome to the Summerland," the priest said warmly. "Welcome to your new home." "You know something, Father?" Joe asked a bit agitatedly. "I don't know what's going on around here. I don't know what to make of this business of being dead and alive at the same time. I guess I'm dead, all right, like you said, but I never felt more alive in all my life." "How do you explain that?"
"You will learn, my son," said the priest compassionately. Chapter 6, The Valley of the Shadow. What was this that Joe went through? In a previous chapter it was pointed out that what is found beyond the doorway of transition is analogous to the infinitude of snowflakes, each with its unique differences. And so it is not possible in a single discussion, or a single book, to portray what lies beyond that doorway for everyone. But just as we can describe some of the basic characteristics of snowflakes generally, we can also discuss in broad outline some of the things that are usually encountered by those making their transition. Just as the Earth is the natural habitat of individuals still in physical bodies, the equally natural habitat of those who have made their transition is what has been called the Summerland. But you do not find yourself in the Summerland immediately upon passing through the doorway separating the two worlds. There are certain steps to be taken, certain decisions to be made, certain things to be released. You are likely to carry through that doorway with you a certain attachment to things of the Earth, a certain reluctance to leave the Earth and the physical life you have known. This is particularly true if you have little or no spiritual foundation, and if your primary motivation and interests have cantered around things of the Earth. But you will have an opportunity to release the hold of the Earth upon you and turn your face toward the Summerland. And this is more easily done by those who have some understanding of the process of transition. Fortunately, help awaits those who are ready to receive it. Everyone who passes over is met by at least one inhabitant of the other side, someone he knows, if possible, who offers assistance and love and understanding. Here again, how one has lived the spiritual laws of his own being on the earth plane, what he has done with his life, the level of his spiritual understanding, these factors determine whether he will accept the proffered help. That moment of meeting constitutes a most vital crossroads for any individual. If he accepts the help offered and trusts those who offer it, he has nothing to fear and his progress is assured. If he is unprepared to accept the help, if he is too tied to the earth, his progress may be greatly delayed. Upon Joe's sudden transition he had been met with understanding compassion, but he had brusquely swept aside the offer of help, since at that time he was not ready to accept what he so eagerly sought after his months of wandering. So at this point, standing just beyond the doorway of transition, through which you have just passed, you are separated from the Summerland, your natural habitat on that plane of your existence, by what the Imperator teachers call the Valley of the Shadow. This should not be confused with another concept involving the Valley of the Shadow of Death, mentioned in the 23 Roads Arm. Going through the Valley of the Shadow refers to an area of consciousness in which you sever your ties with Earth. There is a realignment and readjustment of the overall pattern of your motivations, your attachments and your spiritual understanding, from which you emerge onto the multidimensional level of the Summerland, your new dwelling place. It should be pointed out that when we speak of going through the Valley of the Shadow, this does not refer to space or to units of distance. The Valley of the Shadow is a condition, a state of consciousness. Or perhaps we should say it is a process during which certain vitally important changes take place in the consciousness. In a sense and to a degree, it is a cleansing process. It is a process of freeing yourself from your physical connections. It is a severing of the ties which would otherwise hold you to the earth and prevent your completing your transition. Since the Summerland exists in a dimension vastly different from the three-dimensional world of the earth plane, it entails different thought processes. Thus, to use an extremely rough analogy,
Going through the valley of the shadow involves a process of shifting mental gears. Until you go through it, after going through the doorway of physical transition, you continue to think in Earth terms, for the most part using three-dimensional thought processes. Not until you go through the valley of the shadow do you begin to think in Summerland terms. So immediately upon making your transition, you stand at the crossroads. There are those who offer you their loving and understanding help in realizing where you are, in making certain adjustments, and in facilitating your progress, but there also remain those attachments you have toward things of the earth. Furthermore, there is your relationship to certain people still on the earth plane, whom you may be loath to leave. And in some cases, in their lack of understanding, they may be trying to pull you back and continue to hold you to them. Dr. James H. Hislop, one of the Imperator teachers, has explained, this interim, when you must make your own decision as to whether you will stay here or go on, is what we call the Valley of the Shadow. It is a place where only you can make the decision. We cannot help you. It is the valley of your decision which way you will go. We could just as well have called it the Valley of Decision. Another of the teachers, a master within the Imperator group, stated, it has been given different names by different people, but the name is unimportant. We call it the Valley of the Shadow, because is it not that veil of darkness between the separation from loved ones, until one reaches the bright sunshine? Keep in mind that these concepts, those of cleansing, mental gears, and so on, are only the roughest of analogies. The reason being that we do not on this plane have the use 6F that additional understanding to comprehend a more accurate description, nor even words with which to describe it. Frequently the Imperator teaches, referring to conditions in various areas over there, speak of the inherent inability of words to convey what they would like us to understand. Many references have been made to the fact that at transition you leave your physical body behind. Perhaps you have wondered how you would identify yourself, or how others could identify you without the medium of a physical body with its distinctive features. Remember that you will continue to have a body, a finer textured one. Joe continued on his way home after the car struck him, and he could not have done this without some kind of body. But this body was not visible to his family because of its higher vibratory rate. Other than the differences in texture and vibratory rate, your new body will be practically the same as the one in which you are now living, and it will be as real as the one through which you now express yourself. It is made of atoms, just as is your present body. The fact that atoms on the earth plane are much heavier than those in the spiritual realm accounts for the new finer texture. From here back to the original source from which you came, and to which you will in time return, there are innumerable planes of consciousness and planes of expression. And for each of these planes you always need the kind of body, the appropriately textured body, that will express your level of consciousness. As you progress into higher and higher levels, your progressive bodies will be of like kind. You will not at any time be without a body in which to function. You will also retain your own unique individuality as you progress from plane to plane. Is it possible for you to predetermine what your own experience is likely to be when you go through the Valley of the Shadow? You are doing that right now. Furthermore, the manner in which, and the extent to which, you are expressing the spiritual laws of your being now are telling you how you will cope with the Valley of the Shadow, as well as the ease, or lack of it, with which you will make this first major adjustment. But the details of what your particular experience will be are indeterminable. Is it possible then to present a typical account of someone's passage through the Valley of the Shadow? No, because there are no typical experiences over there. Every individual is unique to himself. You have already read the accounts that show how two men, Joe and the young soldier, coped with their new experience. Joe, being tied to the earth, went through quite a long period of wandering and uncertainty. The soldier, however, seeing his inert body lying on the ground, knew because of his earlier training that the first thing for him to do was to turn his back on things of the earth, including his useless physical body. So I took that first step and started on my way, he continued, and made what seemed to be a long journey. In time it got very foggy. It was a light fog, not a dark or wet one. I kept on going, and when that fog cleared, my father and mother were waiting until I got out of it, and they were there to greet me. Remember that when Joe emerged into the light, the priest was there awaiting him. This standing at the crossroads, as in this young man's experience, is where many individuals attempt to turn back to the earth which they know. Their progress can thus be very greatly delayed, depending upon the extent of the hold the earth and the material things of the earth have on them. All such delay, and the suffering and frustration attendant upon it, can be completely avoided by the simple measure of one's acquiring an understanding of what is involved, so that he can make the choice to leave the earth behind him. Note how graphically this soldier described the Valley of the Shadow and his journey through it. It was clearly a fog he was in, and he had to go through it alone. He knew that no one else could make the decision for him. His parents were waiting to greet him, but they could do nothing for him until he came out of the fog, which he was able to do easily and relatively quickly. Here we see an excellent example of the value of a solid spiritual foundation. It had been 9 years since he had had his parents with him, but their early teachings remained firmly embedded as a part of his state of being. Thus it was that he could say, "When I stood alongside my body in all that mess there in Vietnam, I knew I had to do something about it. I couldn't stay there, and I felt a pull, an inner something. I didn't care what happened to that body. When I was going through that fog, I got to thinking of all those things my parents had taught me, and what they meant." When he turned his back on his body and all the things of the earth which it symbolized, he was not severing all connection with the earth, as his return to speak through Mrs. Gauze indicated. He was simply effecting a transfer of his primary attachment. While still in his physical body, he obviously was attached to the earth and the things of the earth, but immediately upon his transition he transferred his attachment and his interests to the spiritual plane, which he now understood to be his new place of residence. He was merely changing his place of abode. Does this young man's account of his going through the Valley of the Shadow mean that you, too, will probably experience it as being like a fog? Not necessarily. It cannot be repeated too often that what happens there is as uniquely individual as fingerprints. Chapter V11 Earth's Spiritual Smog. Upon his arrival in the Summerland, Joe's first reaction was one of wonderment and gratitude for being there. He understood extremely little about what was happening to him. But what he did know and understand was that his morale was higher and healthier than at any time he could remember. He was aware of what he thought was a sort of inner cleanness, the degree of which he had never before experienced. Its strangeness to him was equaled only by his sincere gratitude for it. When he first met his new friend, the priest, after going through the Valley of the Shadow, Joe tried to thank him profusely for his help, but words as usual seemed to be woefully inadequate. He considered the priest to be his personal benefactor and liberator. His gratitude extended to Leonard Worthington and members of the AUM Foundation, and he wished that he could personally thank them also for the encouragement they had given him. Joe's amazement at the great change in his circumstances and the change in himself almost approached a state of minor confusion. Sensing this, the priest suggested that Joe rest temporarily. This rest, the priest indicated, would result in Joe's being able to assimilate the simple fact that he was there and that considerable changes had taken place in him. Joe did not feel that he needed rest, but his faith in the priest prompted him to follow the advice. And so he slept, but not for long. Having boundless energy and a mammoth curiosity about this place called the Summerland, and having accepted the reality of what had happened to him, he needed less sleep than most new arrivals from the earth plane of existence. Upon his awakening, Aramius greeted him and, like the priest, welcomed him to the Summerland. "I don't know what this Summerland stuff is all about," Joe answered in his still brusque and unpolished manner. "I don't know much about anything, I guess, but I do know I want to say thank you for what you did. And the same thing goes for that father. He's wonderful, you know that? He's just about the only guy I ever knew that didn't try to kick me around. And you know something else? I sure do wish I could say thank you to that bunch I talked to that encouraged me the way they didn't talk to me into asking for help." "Possibly that can be arranged," replied Aramius. "How? When?" Joe asked excitedly. Sensing Joe's genuine sincerity, Aramius answered, "If you truly want to thank them personally, You may do so. We will arrange a time when I can go with you, to protect you on your journey. I can take care of myself, Joe came back quickly. His muscular frame and hard fists had not always been as idle as during recent months. There are vibratory belts of negation surrounding the earth, Aramis continued as if Joe had not spoken. This does not mean very much to you now, but you will come to know very well indeed what these bands of negation are and the nature of them. You see, every individual lives constantly in a certain personal atmosphere which he creates for himself, from within himself. All mental states and emotional tones are, in a very real sense of the word, energy vibrations. These energy vibrations surround each individual to form his personal aura. And inasmuch as these vibrations have color, which you will now be able to see, having joined us on our side, every individual is surrounded by a mass of color, as well as sound. Joe listened with intense interest, for although most of the words Aramis used were strange to him, he was still able to see somehow what these vibrations and auras were all about. Aramis went on to explain that the color of an aura is determined by the quality of the person's mental and emotional processes and by his spiritual status. One aura might be a combination of delicate hues blended together harmoniously to form a scintillatingly beautiful pattern of color. Another might be made up of colors that are cloudy and muddy and dark and inharmonious, having vibrations which are both unpleasant and inherently destructive. These emanations, this personal aura, surround all individuals on both sides of the veil of transition, Aramis told Joe. The emanating energy has a rate of vibration which is just outside the range of vision of most of the Earth's inhabitants though, as we have noted earlier, some people have a slightly wider range of vision and can see these auras. The colors, and the pattern of colors, making up an aura change from time to time, depending upon the mental and emotional and spiritual state of the individual. And just as each one has his own personal aura, Aramis continued, there is also a collective and composite aura for mankind as a whole for the earth itself. This aura surrounds the earth just as the individual's aura surrounds the physical body. Certain bands of energy frequencies with which science works every day are known to have destructive potentials. When energy vibrates at the frequency known as X-rays, for example, its use on human tissue, if in too great quantities, can be highly destructive. For this reason, its use is rigidly controlled and restricted to those who have had highly specialized training. Different bands of vibrations, on the other hand, are equally beneficent and constructive. Certain color vibrations have definite healing qualities, and scientists are discovering healing qualities in ultra-high-frequency sound waves. In like manner, the vibrations set in motion by love, understanding, forgiveness and compassion are highly beneficial. But their opposite, greed, avarice, hate, jealousy, lust for power are also opposite in their effect. Scientists are coming to a much greater understanding of the deleterious and destructive effect of negative emotions on the body tissues, and you can imagine their much more harmful effect on the individual's spiritual progress. And so it is, Aramis continued, that, increasingly for many years, these negativistic impulses and motivations have predominated in mankind. The result is that the earth has built up its own harmful and destructive aura around itself. When one returns to the earth plane, he must penetrate these destructive bands. Since this can bring about extremely harmful results, it is essential that one have protective measures before he enters the earth's atmosphere. You have just arrived on our side. You have had no experience in coming and going between the two planes. It is commendable that you wish to return and personally express your appreciation to those who gave you so much love and encouragement. Perhaps in time, after you have received intensive training in providing your own protection, you may be allowed to come and go by yourself. In the meantime, it will be well to grant your wish that you return and thank those individuals. I will accompany you to the earth, in order to assure your complete protection. You know something? Joe asked, after having appeared to be lost in thought. I don't know much about this place where I've come to live, but I like it. And you know something else? You folks around here are on the level more than anybody I ever knew. I don't know how I know it, but I know that I can trust you all down the line. It wasn't that way where I used to live. Chapter 8, Gratitude. Later, while many things were converging into Joe's thinking, and he was trying to see them all in perspective, Aramis approached. Joe followed him unquestioningly as they began their journey back to the Earth. The sensation, as Joe would have described it, was like that of being disoriented. He seemed to feel that he was going somewhere but was confused as to the direction of it. But the feeling of confusion was actually only slight and momentary, and as it disappeared his directional orientation was again established. And Joe was delighted suddenly to take note of his whereabouts. He and Aramis were approaching Mrs. Gores, who was seated before the same group of AUM members Joe had visited previously. As Joe and Aramis approached her, Mrs. Gores challenged them silently, to be sure they were members of the Imperator group, before she loaned them her vocal mechanism. It will be remembered that when Joe first visited this group he had not completed his transition. Not having gone through the Valley of the Shadow, he was still tied to the Earth. For this reason, and also because of his uncouth manner, Aramis had taken exceptional care in protecting Mrs. Gores. He had seen to it that Joe kept his distance and had no contact with her. As Joe later explained it, he talked into the teacher and then that teacher talked into the lady. But Joe's going through the Valley of the Shadow had had a tremendously calming effect upon his belligerent hot-headedness. Thus, at this visit, he was allowed to speak to the group directly, through 11RS. Gores. Hello. He called out enthusiastically. Ya didn't think I'd be back so soon, did ya? Dia know who I am? Dia know? There were several affirmative but surprised responses. Well, first, lemme tell you, he began spiritedly, that guy you called. Excuse me, that one you called a guide isn't a guide at all. He's one of the higher up cell but he said I could come. He said I could come and tell you what I have to say. First, I'm gonna say thank you. And geez, I mean it. But then I have some other things to tell you. I don't know what to say first. You know, my voice is different, don't you think? Well, you see. Well, it's hard to tell you about these things. I thought I was myself, and I wasn't myself. And then this wonderful person in white, Aramis, that's his name, he got me to one side and he showed me what a messed up thing I was. Well, I even talk different now. I use different words. You see, I can talk more like you talk. You wait and see. Well, you remember that when I was here before, you tried to get me to ask that guide, the one that brought me here, to help me get straightened out. You said all I'd need to do was just ask for help and I'd get all the help I needed. And I told you I'd give the thing a try. Well, to tell you the truth, I didn't have much hope. But I thought I'd keep my word. And after I had talked to Aramis, you can imagine how it hit me when. What Dia think happened to me? You know, I'm Catholic, and along comes a father. Was I floored to see him stand in there by me? Because I haven't been to church since I can't remember when. Well, you know, he didn't lay me out. There's not one over here over there that has been tough on me. I had it coming, but they don't kick you around. They don't send you to hell. At first I thought that was where the father was gonna send me, but he didn't. He put his arm around me and he said, now, my son, let's talk this over. Do you believe that? I certainly do, replied Leonard, with sincerity that was obvious to Joe. Well, he talked to me, Joe continued. Then we sat down and we talked it over. And, you know, I'm dead but I'm not dead. I don't understand the whole business too well myself yet, but anyhow he told me why my family wouldn't talk to me and why you do talk to me. He told me that if I hadn't listened to you the other night I'd be on the downgrade. Maybe you can't believe that. But you know, I never had a chance here where you are now. I never got to do the things I wanted to do, so. Well, you know. No, you don't know, but it was kind of. This father told me that I could have a chance and be what I wanted to be. On the level. And I'm gonna be what? I guess you better not ask me yet because I got so many things ahead of me, I don't know what I'm gonna be. But I know I'm gonna get straightened out, and I'm gonna help the rest of the fellows, and I'm gonna show them what they can do too. Of course I gotta get myself straightened out first. After that is over, what I gotta do, then I'm gonna try to get other people to do what these teachers are giving me a chance to do. Does that make sense to you?